Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for standing by, and welcome to Astaccio's conference call to discuss the first quarter of 2011 results. This event is also being broadcast simultaneously on the Internet via webcast, which can be accessed on the company's IR site, www.astaccioparchisapasoyas.com.br/IR, together with the respective presentation and the earnings release. We would like to inform that during company's presentation, all participants will only be able to listen to the call. We will then begin the Q&A session when further instructions will be given. In case you need any assistance during the conference, please request the operator's help by pressing star zero. This conference call contains forward-looking statements that are subject to known and unknown risks and uncertainties that could cause the company's actual results to differ materially from those in the forward-looking statements. Such statements speak only as of the date they were made, and the company is under no obligation to update them in light of new information or future developments. I will now turn the conference over to Mr. Eduardo Alcalay, CEO. Please, Mr. Eduardo, you may proceed.
For 2011. I'll start the presentation with the highlights of the quarter and then hand over to Rogério Melzi, our CFO, who will comment in deeper detail our results. And after that, we'll go into the Q&A session. Let's start with slide number two on the presentation, which is available on our website. First, I'd like to highlight the success of our admissions process in this first quarter of the year, with total enrollments growing by 24% from the same period of last year. That is more than 73,000 new students enrolled in our on-campus and distance learning programs. This was a record result, which led our total students base to grow by more than 11% to more than 240,000 students. And our net revenues for the period grew by 7.7%, reaching 276 million reais in the quarter. Our EBITDA margin expanded almost 2 percentage points in relation to the first quarter of last year, mainly due to the net revenue growth in the period as a result of the very positive intake process, the efficient management of our direct costs, and the dilution of our general and administrative expenses, which registered gains in nominal terms, also when compared to the first quarter of 2010. It's important to note also that we concluded very significant acquisitions in the post-secondary education segment in the quarter, namely Faculdade Atual in the north and FAU and Faterni in the northeast. I say that they are significant because they trigger our strategy already announced of market consolidation and positioning Estácio as a leading player, especially in areas with high growth and higher than average growth as the northeast and the north of Brazil in the post-secondary education market. We also announced the acquisition of Academia do Concurso, the leading provider of preparatory courses for civil service exams in the city of Rio de Janeiro. Academia had registered enrollment in its short duration courses of over 29 students in 2010. This acquisition is also important. It represents Estácio's entry in this very promising and also high growth segment with great synergies with our main business, especially by putting together a distance learning platform for future growth and nationalization of the Academia do Concurso business model. Let's go into slide number three. There we show our consolidated net revenues growing by 7.7% for the quarter, mainly due to the increase of our average ticket on the on-campus segment, as well as the expansion of our student base. Our recurring EBITDA, as I mentioned, was 21% higher than the first quarter of 2010, reaching almost 48 million reais in the period and representing a 1.9 percentage points expansion in our EBITDA margin. EBITDA growth was one of the main factors responsible for the growth in net income as well. And now, with that, I will hand over to Melzi, who will comment in more detail our results. Please, Melzi.
Thank you, Okalai. Good morning, everyone. It's good to be back with you again. Well, we'll begin my comments on slide number 4, which will talk about our enrollment performance for the quarter. And, well, I'd like to start by saying that we are very, very satisfied with our intake performance in this first quarter of 2011. It was actually the second time in a row that our enrollment cycle for on-campus programs posted record high growth, which resulted this time in a 25.8% growth over the same period last year. Well, it is important to notice that our enrollment actually went up to April 17th this year, and this happened due to a better academic planning that we did here, and obviously this helped us somehow to achieve this result. And these results, by the way, clearly demonstrate, in our view, an increasing recognition about the high quality of our products, as well as the success of our marketing strategies. It also makes us believe that our managerial tools are resulting in more and more commitment from our people, who are now more and more involved with our company's goals, and therefore they are putting more effort in helping us to get the students in. On the other hand, our distance learning operation showed an increase of roughly 20% year over year, and you know only. And this is explained mainly by the academic calendar that we defined for the year, which forced us to end our intake efforts by March 23rd. So in the other way as compared to the on-campus programs. Since we operate with 4 intake programs over the year for distance learning, however, this should not affect our results since there is a natural carryover to the second entry period, which is already in course. Flipping out to slide number 5, we can see that at the end of the first quarter of 2011, we had 241,400 post-secondary students, which implies a growth of 11.6% over the first quarter of 2010. The increase was due to the expansion in the base of undergraduate and graduate students enrolled in on-campus programs, which increased by 5.3%, and obviously resulted from the success of our enrollments for efforts I just talked about, but also from the acquisitions of Faculdade Atual and FAU Faculdade Natal, which added around 7,000 students to our base. Our distance learning student base almost doubled on a year-over-year basis, expanding around 80% compared with the same quarter of 2010, and reaching almost 31,000 students at the end of the quarter. Let's go now to slide number 6, which talks about revenues. Our net operating revenue in the quarter was 275.88 million reais, which is 7.7% bigger than revenues in first quarter 2010. This increase was obviously caused by the growth in our student base, but also by price increases applied to keep our prices in line with inflation. Talking a bit about our average ticket, it is very important to tell you that for calculating the average ticket in the first quarter of 2011, we have to use the base date of March 31st to be in line with revenues. And we also must exclude the acquisitions closed in the period to bring both years to a comparable basis. In this scenario, we can see that our tuitions rose by 5.3% year over year, reflecting price increases due to inflation and also a better mix of courses with fewer associate degree students. The average distance learning ticket increased by 2.8%, continuing to be impacted by intensive enrollment campaigns to expand and maintain our student base as we learn more and more about this segment. Moving now to slide number 6, where we talk about costs. And again, I would like first to highlight the ratio of cash cost to net revenue, which showed an efficiency gain of 0.8 percentage points, mainly due to the efficient management of third-party services and leasing expenses, as well as to infrastructure-related costs. It is also very important to point out, however, that our performance in personal costs is actually a very good one. As you can see, even including INSS, which is our labor-related taxes contributions, Our ratio to net revenue remained stable at 47.2% on a year-over-year basis. For this to be possible, we had to put a lot of effort and to achieve many gains in the operational line, thus offsetting the effects from the increase in INSS due to the last step up of the labor tax here at Estácio. Also worth mentioning that our textbook material costs to net revenue increased by 0.3 percentage points as more students are coming in the new academic model. We expect a further increase in this line already in the second quarter because a reasonable part of our admissions took part in March and early April, which resulted in some carryover for the next quarter. On slide number 8 now, we'll talk a bit about our selling, general, and administrative expenses, excluding depreciation and non-recurring expenses. And once more, I want to call your attention to personal costs because, again, we were able to maintain these costs as a percentage of net revenues almost flat, despite the pressures coming from the increase in labor taxes, the same increase as I mentioned before, and also from the fact that in first quarter 2010, we had a larger vacation period, which drives labor costs naturally down. Meaning, again, in order to be able to remain flat, there is a lot of effort and a lot of efficiency gains. Otherwise, this line would be showing a growth against last year. Other general and administrative expenses represented 6.6% of net revenue in the quarter, implying a margin gain of 1.5 percentage points when compared with the first quarter of last year. This better performance happened based on our continuous effort to apply budgeting and managerial tools such as the zero-based budgeting and what we call here the matrix control, which are helping us to hold inflation through efficiency and better negotiations, but also based on gains due to reversals of provisions for contingencies. On the other hand, sales, advertising expenses, represented 8.6% of net revenue in the quarter due to higher expenses with marketing campaigns in the quarter to support the enrollment period at the beginning of the 2011 academic year. These results again demonstrate our commitment to the strategy of controlling costs with the utmost discipline so that we can reinvest our funds, our savings, into advertising without affecting our margins. In other words, we continue to generate in-house savings wherever possible so that we can increase our external investments, which is a highly sustainable strategy that will have returns realized over the medium and long terms. Flipping through slide number 9 now, we talk about the number of days of receivables, which reached this quarter 55 days. There is an increase when compared to the first quarter of last year, and this is pretty much due to the termination of our policy of granting discounts to students for prepaying their monthly tuition payments, what happened in July 2010. I believe most of you remember that. It is also worth to notice that, as we have been telling you all, this is in line with our expectations of keeping our days of receivables between 45 and 55 days, because we believe we should not be very concerned up to the point when this reaches 60 days or more. At the same time, receivables indeed increased, but based on two drivers that give us a reasonable comfort with our portfolio of receivables. First one is an increase in the FIES. You all know the government funding program. These receivables rose by 6 million reais in the quarter. And again, because they are they actually consist of credits that will be at some point used against taxes, they do not represent any kind of risk to Estácio. Second, we also increased our credit card receivables by other 11 million reais when compared to first quarter 2010. And again, this represents a much lower risk of default when compared to other payment means that Estácio used to apply before. Moving now to slide number 10, which graphically shows the growth in EBITDA and EBITDA margin resulting from the factors that we commented in the previous slides. You all can see that recurring EBITDA in the first quarter was 47.9 million reais, with a recurring margin of 17.4%. implying an expansion, in margin expansion actually, of 1.9 percentage points over the same quarter last year. This margin expansion happened pretty much because of net revenue growth in the period, which more than compensated the additional investment in advertising, also due to efficient management of direct costs and due to dilution of general and administrative expenses. I would like to underline that we keep firmly committed to increase profitability in a sustainable way, medium term, long term, increasing margins, and improving quality that will help us to attract and keep more and more students. Going to slide number 11, talking a bit about our cash flow. When we consider our recurring operating cash flow, which is pretty much a bit less the working capital requirements and maintenance capex, which was 20.6 million reais in the quarter, once again we were able to fully finance our working capital and capex by using our own operation cash flow. The 37.2 million reais reduction in the cash balance is mainly related to expansion decisions, both in terms of organic expansion, there is a capex of around 6 million reais in that, and also due to acquisitions totaling a value of 27.2 million reais related to the acquisitions of Atual and FAO Natal. Also important to tell you that among this 20 million reais, there is a organic capex of 10 million reais, 50% of this total, related to a decision, a discretionary decision of us, to change our entire computer infrastructure in all of our campuses. And again, when we do that, we are talking about quality, about student satisfaction, about allowing our students to run the new academic model in a good way. With that, I will pass it call back to Alcalai, who will talk about our outlook.
Okay, thanks, Melzi. And just on the issue of quality, I would like to highlight on page number 12 of our presentation the outcome of the last more than 100 programs per campuses evaluated on on-site visits by our regulator, officials of Ministry of Education. And half of those visits granted a grade 3 to those courses, and the other half was granted 4 or 5, which is the maximum rates in terms of quality evaluation, which clearly reflects the fruits of our efforts and commitment in investing in quality of our infrastructure, our services, and mostly our curriculums and our faculty quality to our students. So this is an evidence of the commitments of quality that we've been undertaking and conditions for our future sustainable long-term growth of our business. Going into page 13, I highlight the major drives for our outlook going forward. Quality, as always, remains a very important and key driver there, and focusing on the quality of our content, our curriculums, the quality of our tools and processes, our admissions processes, evidence very, very clearly the success and the efficacy of our commercial and advertising strategy with the great success, a new all-time high record for admissions in this quarter. Our tools, you know, the access by our students for all our content and services, the bibliographic material as part of the tuitions. We're going towards another front now, the second semester, by the tablets being delivered by our law program students in the Rio de Janeiro state. Technology is always a very key component as a competitive advantage against our competitors, helping us to better distribute our content and services to our students, as well as a very good high-level student service platform to our main public target. Efficiency gains, as this quarter clearly demonstrates already, we've been able to escalate, to grow our business and expand margins as our perspectives and as our commitment for next years, and we will remain to do so based both on the organic growth, expanding our already existent basis, as well as the last point here, the consolidation strategy. We are very focused. We have a very solid pipeline of possible acquisitions. We remain very disciplined in terms of price and in terms of the quality of the businesses that we want to acquire. Quality meant as complementarity, alignment with our philosophy and market strategy, and we are very, very positive and enthusiastic with the outlook ahead of us. So with that, I would like to open for you and go into the question and answer session, please.
Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the Q&A session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star then one. If at any point your question has been answered, you may remove your question from the queue by pressing star then two. We will pause momentarily to collect the questions. Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star then one. Our first question comes from Kadojo Hunaki, Private Capital. Please go ahead.
Hey guys, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, I have about five questions, and I'll just go through them in no particular order. Number one, what is your EBITDA margin expansion goal for full year 2011? The April 17 date, how many students were enrolled in that in those first 17 days of April? That's number two. Number three, how sustainable is the price increase in average tickets? I know it was 5.3%. I think it's going to come down a little bit. I just don't know how sustainable it's going to be. Number four, what is the split of new enrollment, dropout, and graduations for your undergrad students? I know you have a lump number there in your it combined graduate and undergraduate. I'm just trying to figure out for undergrad. And finally, number five, how much did you pay for academia, and what was their margin at acquisition date, their EBITDA margin? Thank you.
Let me talk, this is Mills. Let me talk to you about your second and third question, then Alkali will help with the others. As for your question about number of students that actually came after March 31st, this is around 2,500 students. The point is that at the same time, you have to consider that there is already a dropout happening, because as we started our classes in end of January, beginning of February, we are already, by this point in time, we are already, you know, midway to the term. So you have to net this, okay? Don't forget that. As for your question number three, price increases so far very sustainable, because we are pretty much following inflation, so there is nothing we've been trying to do so far, at least, in order to go beyond inflation. There is a lot of inflationary pressure in Brazil, so if at any time we see that inflation will be above our expectations, we may be able to come back and revisit our strategy and even try to bring some other price increases still this year. But again, it will depend a lot on our perception against inflation. So far, they've been absolutely sustainable and in line with our strategy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. On the EBITDA margin expansion target, Kojo, we remain to focus on the 200 basis points of EBITDA margin expansion for the year. Okay. On the Academia do Concurso acquisition, we paid 16 million reais for the property, and in terms of EBITDA multiple, if that's what you asked,
I asked for the EBITDA margin, Eduardo. EBITDA margin it was generating on those 10 million.
Yeah, so that's what I was about to say. It is about 15 to 20% EBITDA margin, meaning, you know, a 1.5 to 2 million EBITDA, so meaning between 7 and 9 times EBITDA. And this is the EBITDA as is. This business being small, as you can see, relatively to our size and relatively to what we can do with that, you know, is a EBITDA which we can expand significantly going forward, especially with growth, and growth
towards other places and cities out of Rio de Janeiro, especially through the distance learning platform. Academia does no distance learning whatsoever. It's only on-campus based programs in one site, in two sites in Rio de Janeiro. We will we are already working to roll out the distribution of distance learning programs, which is the big chunk of the of this market already. So great growth potential going forward. So this acquisition in terms of IRR to us, considering the next 3-5 years, is highly attractive. In terms of your fourth question, could you please help us here? Could you repeat that? I didn't get it straight.
I think I got it. He's asking about the split between undergrad and grad students. Could you, Flavio will send to you this detail, but I can tell you that in that total number of on-campus students, roughly 10 to 11,000 are graduate students. And as for intakes, it's a pretty small number because the enrollment process for graduate students actually goes through the second quarter. So almost 100% of those intakes come from undergrad programs. Okay? We'll talk about that's it, right?
Mm-hmm.
We cover all the five questions.
That's no it. Problem. Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Pleasure.
Once again, if you have a question, please press star, then one. Our next question comes from Matias Galaris of Black Creek Investment. Please go ahead.
Hello, good morning. I'd like to know how many students were receiving FIES assistance in the first quarter of this year and last year, and how do you see the FIES evolving going forward?
Hi, Matias. We had a little bit more than 8,000 students under the FIES program. March this year, that represents a 25% growth from last quarter, which is interesting, but nothing very sort of extraordinary. As we already expected, we've been and talking a little bit about the present and past of FIES, and then I will jump into future expectations. Up until now, we already were, talking to you guys, investors and analysts, that FIES had significant obstacles ahead of it in order really to start showing great significant results overall in the market. You know, it's us and the overall post-secondary private education industry, because it has one, very tough distribution capabilities, being distributed only by Caixa Econômica, which had no focus and efforts whatsoever to do that distribution in the good way. It also put together a set of conditions for the students to be eligible for the FIES, which represented big obstacles for those students wanting to do FIES. So that is why, so far, still a very small percentage of our overall base, less than 5%, is within the FIES programs. We've been talking to Mackey and to the government over the last year about those obstacles, about those difficulties having to be raised or eliminated, and we had great recent news about that. The government has heard us, and they just announced. We met the minister and the secretary, which is the deputy minister, last week, and they already communicated to us, and this will become official by a decree from them in the next week or so, that the most important obstacle for the FIES to grow will be raised, meaning that each and every FIES student needs to have the ENEM test, which is a sort of a SAT test, like the one you have in the U.S. That is a big obstacle, because 70%, 80% of overall industry applicants, they don't have the ENEM, because they are working adults, working already, and they have graduated from secondary school 4-3 years ago, and that's why they don't have the ENEM. And this represents 80% of applicants. So this has been raised, And with that, FIES from now on, I think we'll start growing as, you know, we would like and as everybody would expect. So going forward, more and more, I think FIES will be a growing leverage behind further penetration into the C-class of higher education. So, you know, we are very focused on now with, you know, the avenue ahead of us better, you know, paved and cleaner without those obstacles. We are more and more focused with our commercial efforts, our communications, both to incoming students as well as, you know, students who are already with us and want to better finance their tuitions. We are pretty much focused on strengthening, you know, the enrollment through FIES as an additional potential leverage, because, you know, it's very good to see a very high record result in new enrollments, and that still with no significant whatsoever participation on FIES in that result. So when FIES really starts working pretty positively, you know, we could do even more.
Great. Thank you, Eduardo.
Our next question comes from Atul Gandhi of HNC Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. My question is along the lines of acquisitions, and I wanted to get your view on how important that role that plays in your growth strategy, and also as your peers Anguera and Crouton follow a similar strategy, how the price paid for those acquisition targets is expected to change as well.
Yeah, I mean, so the acquisitions is an important part of our growth and margin expansion. Even though our margin expansion strategy is not fully dependent on that, you know, I would say that less than 20% of our margin expansion potential resides in acquisitions for the next years. But yes, growth is important, and we expect to do important acquisitions going forward, around 20 to 25,000 students each year for the next 4 years. And that's why we are working very hard on that. We have a totally focused and dedicated M&A team working on that. I am personally involved in that strategy as well. And, you know, the initial results have already been there with the four acquisitions that we concluded over the last five months. We've done a screening of the overall Brazil. We've prioritized that screening by the areas of higher interest that we have, and that means interesting new areas as well as areas where we already are, and we have lots of advantages in adding on more mass to our already existing businesses. And this represents São Paulo State, Midwest, North, and Northeast. We are already present in those areas. As you know, we are sort of a nationwide player, and we gain a lot by adding a new mass to where we already operate, like the one that we've done in Natal in the Northeast. We had 2,500 students there. We multiplied that by almost four with the two acquisitions that we did in Natal. In terms of competition and prices, yes, there is competition out there. Crotone and Anhanguera are all over the place. Frankly speaking, you know, so far, the effect of that competition in terms of prices and difficulties on doing deals, so far is not a point of concern to me. You know, the market is very big. The market is very big, and there is a very sort of an ample offer of targets there. Targets have been suffering a lot in under the context of a highly demanding regulator, which has been turning the lives of these medium and small players very, very, very difficult. And also competition, you know, companies like us, which come out there with a greater product offering, greater strategy, we are stealing market share of those guys. So more and more these guys come to us more open to doing a transaction. So far, I'm not concerned with competition and prices. And again, in light of competition with prices, we always exercise our discipline. We always sort of a walk away of a deal which does not bring in value creation to the company and to our shareholders. We monitor and we evaluate acquisitions here on an IRR attractiveness basis. We don't look too much at enterprise value per student whatsoever. We look at IRR, considering the potentials of that business going forward, and we always exercise that discipline in some sense.
Great. Thanks for taking the question.
Okay.
Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then one. We have one more question from Atul Gandhi of HNC Capital. Please go ahead.
Thanks again. I also wanted to understand your view on FIES and how that is expected to change the dropouts going forward, and any other benefits you may have projected in your business plan in terms of provision for doubtful accounts.
Yeah, that is a great issue. We run already at the lowest provision for doubtful account in the industries. We run in average at 4.5% of revenues, which is the lowest. But the lowest, and you always have to look at PDA together with days receivable, so which needs to be very much under control. But you can have a very low PDA and have big 90, 85 days of receivables. So that is a trap, right? Those 90 days of receivables sooner or later will hit you in the face and translate into higher PDA losses down into your P&L. We have very much under control, good quality receivables, 55 days, ranging between 45 and 55 days over the last 2 years, and we have a very under control PDA provision. That is a result of great quality and very disciplined credit exposure management. Obviously, FIES, and as you may know, an important part of dropouts are explained by students don't having the financial means to keep on with paying his tuitions, and that translates into some time. That translates into receivables losses and PDA. So certainly, FIES is a big positive leverage for reducing dropouts, keeping students, with us throughout the entire term of his programs, and obviously not turning into PDA. So that is certainly a leverage there, as well as, new students coming more and more to the market in a bigger amounts. But in spite of all of that, Mito, quite frankly, we do not factor in any possible gains in PDA in our future numbers coming from FIES. And if you ask us why we do that, it's because, it's somehow a high level of uncertainty in terms of how much that will be and the timing in which that will happen. We know that it will happen. We are pretty much working very hard to explore that advantage. But frankly speaking, is in some ways in something which is so much sort of out of our control, because there are lots of external variables operating in that thing, that we prefer to be disciplined and conservative and not tell you that, well, X percentage points of my EBITDA is going to come from lower PDA because of FIES. This is too much if and if. So we prefer not to do so. So when you look at and when we say that we are focused on bringing in 200 basis points of EBITDA margin gain, that's absolutely the things under our control. And FIES growth of more admissions and FIES positive effect on lower PDAs, it's all going to be pluses that we would have
and we will explore going forward. Certainly, you know, I'm very, very positive, especially after last week when we met the minister and he talked about his plans and his commitments for leveraging the FIES program. I'm very, very optimistic about we accelerating the level of growth for the next, you know, 2, 3, 4 years in the overall industry. And certainly we're going to be there taking the lion's share of that movement. But frankly speaking, you know, we prefer to, not to factor that in elements of future FIES wins in that favor, in that direction.
Okay, great. Thanks so much for the clarification. If I may just ask a follow-up on that conversation you had with the government, could you maybe just provide a little bit more color on, the obstacle that they were referring to in terms of the test, and if you can quantify any, you mentioned the benefits would be significant, if you can maybe quantify your views, your preliminary views on that benefit.
Absolutely. We met the minister for 2 full days in a congress here in Brazil the other day, and we had very deep and ample discussions with him. The main obstacle that is about to be eliminated is the following. Today, the FIES, the way it is, all students, both already students wanting to get into FIES to renew their enrollments, or new students, all of them need to have, and this is 2011 onwards, up until last year it was not that, 2011 onwards, all students need to have done the ENEM test. This is E-N-E-M. It is a test that they need to do when they get out of school, they get out of high school, okay? So in order to be eligible for the FIES, you need to have this exam to get the FIES, according to the current FIES rules. Right last year, because this was announced last year, right on that date, I told the ministry saying, look at the reality of our post-secondary education industry in Brazil. Between 70 and 80% of all applicants in the post-secondary admissions process, 70 to 80% of these guys are not kids who just got out of high school. 70 or 80% of those guys are working adults, guys with, 20, 25, even sometimes 30 years of age, who left high school for quite some time. And these guys, 70 to 80% of applicants, they don't have the ENEM because 5, 4, even 3 years ago, they were not obliged to do so. So you are putting a condition for the FIES, which 80% of the target group there, applicants, do not meet that condition. So we are not going to have a substantial amount of FIES students out there, right? And they were sensitive to that, and they finally agreed to raise that requirement. So they are about to make that official in a decree from the ministry. They just raised that requirement from now on, we are basically multiplying by 5, the amount of potential FIES students in each admission process, because only 20% had that condition, and now 100% of potential new students will meet that condition. So that is a big change, and that is why we are positive about the positive impacts of that. In order to better understand those news and so forth, Daniel Guever from Santander, he was in that Congress, and he has just published a paper on that, the news that he heard on that Congress directly from the minister. So it's interesting if you could access that Santander research note.
Sure, I will. Thanks so much. That is very helpful.
Thank you.
Since there seems to be no further questions, I would like to turn the floor over to Mr. Eduardo Akalai for his closing remarks.
Okay, thank you very much for this participating in our
conference call. As usual, our investor relations department is available here to clarify further questions. We hope to see you soon and meet you in our subsequent calls and events. So once again, thank you very much and have a great day. Bye-bye.
This concludes Astaccio's conference call. You may now disconnect. Have a good day.